I like to look at things in the world and I try to draw comparisons and everything with God's word of what the world is, or what's going on in the world, or how His creation speaks. And also, a confession, I'm a big World War II history buff. I love history from World War II. And we're compared as soldiers and an army for God. So I compare us with soldiers or with an army. So I figure, well, you know, if we're going to be the army, well, we need to be the best. So in history, probably the best, most famous army is the infantry, is the first infantry, known as the Big Red One. And it was first formed in 1917, but it became legend, I get, during World War II. Because they fought nearly in every major battle. And in fact, I'll read just a brief history of their accomplishments. It says, the 1st Infantry, as a part of the 2nd Corps of the Division, landed in Oran, Algeria on 8th of November 1942 as part of Operation Torch, the Allied invasion of French North Africa. And they led the Allied assault in brutal fighting at El Guder, Bejar, and Matar. The 1st Infantry was in combat in the North African campaign from the 21st of January 43 to May 9th of 1943, helping secure Tunisia. And in July of 1944 or 43, the division took part in Operation Husky, invading Sicily under the command of Major General Allen. Lieutenant General George S. Patton specifically requested the division as part of the forces in the invasion of Sicily. And through much heavy fighting and all this, they ran the Germans and Italy out of Sicily and freed Sicily. So when that campaign was over, they returned and was actually part of the Normandy invasion. And they was the 1st Infantry Division and one regimented combat team from the 29th Infantry comprised the first wave of troops that assaulted the German army defenses on Omaha Beach. And as their legend grew, they led attacks, several attacks, and was involved in the Battle of the Bulge in December of 44. And they were very decorated. Out of that 1st Infantry during World War II, 16 members of that division were awarded the Medal of Honor. The division actually had 3,616 killed in action. They had 15,208 wounded in action, and 644 died later of those wounds. So it was a very courageous group of military men, of soldiers. Very courageous, very decorated. And when you think of war, and when you think of infantries and armies and taking over, as when they went into Africa, and then when they went into Sicily, when they went into Normandy, you know, you think there's only really two things you think of in war. That's blowing things up and killing people. But when you look into what they actually did, there was way more to it than that. Back in the fall, we went, was able to make a trip to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., and in Washington, D.C., when you go in the Holocaust Museum, and I'd recommend it for anyone who's never been there, when you at the end of it, the Jewish people that constructed it, they have an area where they honored all the troops that came in and actually set them free from the concentration camps. They called them liberators. They didn't call them people who blew up and killed They called them liberators. And when you go and look at it, what they actually did, they liberated North Africa from the Germans. They liberated the people from the Isle of Sicily from the Germans and the Italians. They liberated the French from the Germans when they invaded Normandy and marched through France. Yes, in that they had to fight. They had to fight the enemy. But their job was to liberate. They didn't fight the people in the country that was under the rule of the Germans and the Italians. They liberated those people. And that's our job as Christians. We're soldiers, but we're liberators. We're not here to fight, we're here to liberate. Yes, there comes a time when we do have to fight. And I'm going to get to that. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 11. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. That's what we fight. And so often as Christians, we forget that. We're here to liberate the world from the enemy. We're not here to fight the world. We're here to liberate the world. Just as the big red one didn't go into France to fight the French because they were under enemy occupation, they went into France to liberate the French and to run out and overthrow the enemy occupation. Second Corinthians chapter 10. I'll start with verse 1. Now I, Paul, beseech ye, by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, who in the presence am based among you, not being absent, and bold toward you. But I beseech you, that I may not be bold when I am present with that confidence, wherewith I think to be bold against some, which think of us as if we walk according to the flesh. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. Again, we don't battle the flesh. We don't battle flesh. We battle spiritually. We battle the enemy. We have to. He is the one that we fight. He is the one that we attack. Not those who are under his control, those that are his prisoners. They're those that are held under his rule, or those that are even trapped in his concentration camp. Being a soldier means you follow out the orders and the commands from your commander, from your leader. So let's, just as the Big Red One followed the commands of the United States when we went in, we tried to, the people who were under the captivity of Germany and Italy, we tried to give them medical aid, we tried to help them. We tried to help them rebuild. We did all that. Well, let's see what our job. What does our commander expect from his army? So let's go. So the best way to do is hear from our commander's mouth. So let's go to Luke chapter 4. And we'll start with verse 16. And he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and as his custom was, he went into the synagogue to the Sabbath day and stood up to read. And there was delivered unto him the book of the prophet Isaiah. And when he had opened the book, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives and recovering of sight to the blind, and set at liberty them that are bruised, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord. And as he closed the book, and he gave it again to the minister, and sat down, the eyes of the synagogue, all of them that were in the synagogue, were fastened on him. And he began to say unto them, this day is this scripture fulfilled in your ears. Well, there's our commander. And this is his orders. If he was sent, and we're his people, then we're sent to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, recovering a sight to the blind, and set at liberty them that are bruised. The interesting word here is the word there for captives. When you look it up, actually means prisoners of war. But this is the orders that he gave. This is the message that he gave. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I want my people to do. We preach deliverance. We preach. We heal the brokenhearted. We do just like the big red one. We go into the enemy's territory, and those that are under his rule, we minister to them. We're the light. We show them the way. We try to set them free. And so did our leader actually follow through with these things? Did he actually do what he told, you know, the message that he left for us? Did he actually do this? I have a few examples. John chapter 4, starting with verse 3. He left Judea and departed into Galilee, and he must needs to go through Samaria. Which cometh he to the city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near to the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. And Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied from his journey, sat thus on the well, and it was about the sixth hour. There cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus saith unto her, give me drink. For his disciples were gone away into the city to buy meat. Then saith the woman of Samaria unto him, how is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which I am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Jesus answered and said unto her, if thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, give me drink, thou would have asked him, and he would give thee living water. The woman saith unto him, sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence, and thou hast living, from whence then hast thou that living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, and gave us the well, and drank thereof, and his children and his cattle? Jesus answered and said unto her, whoever drinketh this water shall thirst again. But whoever drinketh this water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I give him shall be in a well of water springing up from everlasting life. The woman saith unto him, sir, give me this water, and I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. And Jesus said, well, go call your husband and come hither. And the woman answered and said, I have no husband. And Jesus said unto her, thou hast well said, I have no husband. For thou hast had five husbands, and he whom thou hast is not thy husband. So that saidst thou truly. The woman saith unto him, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and ye say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Jesus said unto her, woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. Ye worship, ye know not what. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father seeketh such to worship him. So, as we all know the story of the woman at the well, Jesus He came to her, and she was a sinner, as we later found out. But he never attacked her. He never did anything to make her feel worthless. If anything, he was trying to build her up. And then he gave her the message of the kingdom, that there is a well that has living water, that when you take it, you will not thirst again. And you will worship God in spirit and in truth. That was the message that he gave to her. He didn't attack her. He tried to liberate her. So that's example number one. Example number two. John 8. We'll start with verse 1. Jesus went into the Mount of Olives, and early in the morning he came again into the temple, and all the people came unto him, and then sat down, and he taught them. And the scribes and the Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they said unto him, Master, this woman was taken in adultery, in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us what such should be stoned. But what sayest thou? And they said this, tempting him, that they might have to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down with his finger and wrote on the ground, as though he had heard them not. So when they continued asking him, he lifted up himself and said unto them, He that is without sin among you, let him cast the first stone at her. And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. And when they had heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, went out one by one, beginning at the eldest, even unto the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus had lifted up himself, and he saw no one but the woman, he said unto her, Woman, where are thine accusers? Hath no man condemned thee? And she said, No man, Lord. And Jesus said unto her, Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more. Yeah. So again, you had a woman who was caught in the very act of adultery, which also always begs the question, why wasn't the man there too? But she was caught dead in her sin. She had no excuse. But he liberated her. He didn't condemn her or say she should be stoned. He just said, whoever's here who hasn't committed sin, go ahead. You start throwing the stone. And there's really only one there that had the right to throw the stone, and it was him, and he didn't. He forgave, and he told her. He said, Go, sin no more. And one last example. John 5, starting with verse 4. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first after the troubling of the water stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. And there was a certain man was there, which had an infirmity 38 years. And when Jesus saw him lie and knew that he had been now a long time in that cause, he saith unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? But the impotent man answered and said, Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. But Jesus said unto him, Rise and take up thy bed and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, and took up his bed and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day. It is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. And he answered them, and he said, He that made me whole, the same said, Take up thy bed and walk. Then they asked him, What man is it that said unto thee, Take up thy bed and walk? And he that was healed which not knew who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away to the multitude, with the multitude being in that place. Afterwards, Jesus findeth him in the temple and said unto him, Behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon thee. Again, Jesus went to the man and liberated, and he set him free. In every instance that you look, when he worked with sinners, when he talked to sinners, his concern was for them to be set free. He wasn't ready to fight them. He wasn't ready to tell them what they were doing wrong. He was ready to be there to help them. In fact, the only instances that you will find that he jumped on to people for doing wrong was the church. He jumped onto the rabbis because of their rules and their regulations. Because they didn't care about the people. They didn't care. All they cared was about their rules and their patterns and their traditions. But I went, all of this to say this. It seems that we as a church, and I use the church as a whole, not just this church, but Christ's people, we tend to forget. We tend to remember that we're the warriors for Christ. We're His warriors and we fight His battles. But we tend to forget that our job is to liberate the people under the rule of the enemy. It's not our job to fight those people. Just as the Big Red One came in and freed France and freed Sicily, it's our job is to free the people that are captured and that are imprisoned. And some people may be under the rule of the enemy, and some people may be in their concentration camps, and that's where the enemy has them imprisoned greatly. And when the liberators marched through and came into the concentration camps and they saw how the Jewish people had been treated and how awful life had been there, again, they never jumped onto any of them for being captured by the Germans, never jumped onto any of them or shot them because they let the Germans do this to them. No, the first thing they done was try to give aid. And when you read the stories, when the soldiers first came in, it absolutely broke their hearts when they came in and saw. Every soldier that went in when they first started going into the concentration camps and found out what was going on, that their first concern for everything was to take care of those people because they had been so mistreated. And we as Christians have a tendency, we want to shoot the people we go into in the concentration camps. When we don't want to be around the bum on the street or the drug addict or the person that is in all kinds of sin, and we don't want to be around them. We want them to be, you know, they're dirty. We can't be around them. We should be rushing to them, trying to give them aid and trying to free them from the people who have them in captivity. And that's thought through all the stuff that has happened in the last few weeks. It's been just been coming in my mind is that we as a church forget that we're liberators, and these people out in the world need to be liberated. They don't need to be condemned because the enemy has a hold on them. They don't need to be condemned because maybe they're so deep in the sin that they're actually in a concentration camp. They need us. We're the only ones that has the way for them to get out. But we're ready to point the finger and condemn and tell them how wrong and awful they are because the enemy has control over them. And we're not willing to go to their aid and help them. We don't have to tell them that they're wrong. We don't have to tell them that. They're the world. They know that. They know what they have's not right. But how are they going to know what is right if we go in just like everything else in the world goes in and tells them how wrong and evil they are? Our job is to bring God to them, and then we got to have enough faith in God that once we bring the message of God and the message of salvation, have enough faith in God that He will end up and free them. And lastly, probably and it goes along with the heart of our commander, his very heart. Let's go to Matthew chapter 22, start with verse 34. But when the Pharisees had heard that he had put the Sadducees to silence, they were gathered together. Then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him and saying, "Master, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" And Jesus said unto him, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, and all thy soul, and all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is likened unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang the law and the prophets." So he answered it. They tried to trip him up, hoping that he would say something out of line so they could nail him. But instead he told them, the greatest commandment there is love the Lord thy God with all thy mind, heart, body, and soul. Second commandment, which is just the same as the first commandment, there's no difference in it, love thy neighbor as thyself. And he added, the whole law depends on these two. If you're doing commandment number one, but not commandment number two, it's a waste of time. If you're doing commandment number two, but not commandment number one, it's a waste of time. You have to be doing both those commandments. They're equal. So if we're not loving God and we're not loving others, which is our motto, then we're not pleasing God. What we have and what we've become, we are warriors. But what we've become are mercenaries. We're not fighting the battle that God wants us to fight. A mercenary, the definition of a mercenary is someone who fights for pay or for his own advantage. In other words, he's in it for himself. And when we're not loving God or if we're not loving others, then we're in it for ourselves. And when once it becomes us, once we become doing it for ourselves, we're no longer a part of His army. We're just a mercenary. And God doesn't want mercenaries. He wants us to be His soldiers. He wants us to carry out what His heart wants to carry out. He wants us to be liberators. He wants us to free. Yes, we fight the enemy when it's time to fight the enemy, but we fight the enemy. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. Just because someone is under the rule of the enemy, we don't fight them. We fight what the enemy stands for, and we stand for what is right and what is in God's Word. But we never condemn and fight the person that is under the enemy's control. We try to love them in. And we have to have enough faith in God that once we show them His love and His way, that God will take it from there and that God will begin to work in that person's heart. Hey, it might not be at that moment, but you don't know what seeds you've planted. But that is our job as being His big red one, His number one army, is to be liberators. And we need to always remember that. Just think to yourself when you're getting ready to do something, am I doing this to be a liberator